like a comet streaking across the sky, like a star imploding and a star dying as a distant sun dwindles out all the life in a universe. We too have decided to come back with an well, I guess that's not really a good metaphor because those things are ending. But anyways, we are on fire here tonight at Not Another Magic Podcast, ladies and gentlemen. I am the raging inferno, the towering flame known as Jack Antonio Sabato de la Hoya King Kong Bundy LaCroix. And joining me tonight, as always, the Virgil to my Dante, Jeff Good.
Are you sure that's not just the gonorrhea?
No, it's not the gonorrhea or the emphysema this time around. It's genuinely not those.
It's not just those, at least. There's more to it than that.
And it's not, God, what's the one that eats your brain? Isn't it, it's not chlamydia, it's the really common one. I can't remember. Anyways,
syphilis.
Oh, syphilis, yes. Yeah, whew, that one actually scares me.
Shadows over Innistrad with all the new Madness cards has like syphilitic insanity or something. That'd be amazing.
But folks, the reason we're making all these fire and rage metaphors is, tonight's episode is, it's about anger, to be completely honest with you. And, the reason for that is, all of our debate points tonight are going to have haste and double strike, and we are going full barrel into this. Yes, and the
Jack
reason for that is,
and anger is in his graveyard.
Oh my. He raged at the world, he raged at his family and life, but mostly he just raged. I still think Raging Goblin has some of the funniest flavor text I've ever seen on my card. But anyways, okay, the reason for that is, it's been a while since I've actually been back on this mic. And, you know, the honest reason for that is, basically Riley brought the Black Plague into the house, is all you need to know. And we had like 2 to 3 weeks where everybody was very violently ill. And the plague is finally lifted. But during this time when I was getting to play nursemaid and juice cup getter and check on everybody's temperatures and make sure everybody was taking their medication, I kept up with Twitter. And a funny thing happened because, like, I didn't have the release valve of Jeff's soothing voice every week to calm me down for my anger. Like, I started getting angry about things that were happening in this community, and they just kept building and building and building and building. You know, Jeff, I want to tell you a funny thing about anger, okay? And I know I'm sidetracking a little bit here at the start of the podcast, people. We have other things we're going to get to shortly. But our main topic tonight is anger. When I was a kid, I hit puberty really, really early. Okay? So I was always much bigger than everybody else in my class in elementary school. And so my whole life, my dad had to tell me, you know, control your temper, Jack. You know, watch your temper, man. Because the truth was, if I got into an altercation with one of these kids, I would have crushed them, you know? So I tried to learn to suppress anger and suppress rage and bury it deep inside me, which caused quite a few problems growing up. But then I became a man and I realized, wait a minute, you shouldn't suppress anger. And you really shouldn't, folks. Anger is a perfectly healthy emotion so long as you're not a danger to yourself and those around you, because anger can be used constructively. And it's my hope tonight that all of the rage that I just have seething and building in me over the last month can be put to, at the very least, some entertainment for our listeners. Maybe be put to some good, you know, within our community. And we'll tackle that in a bit, but the first thing I really want to talk about, because even though I don't play that much Magic anymore, as soon as the Shadows over Innistrad spoilers and puzzles and everything started dropping, I got all into it. Is, man, spoiler season's in full effect. And I gotta say, dude, like, you know, me and you were talking about this before the show. Man, the Shadows over Innistrad, every time they, or anything related to Innistrad or top-down flavor sets, dude, they just knock it out of the fucking park every time with the advertisements and stuff for it, don't they?
Oh yeah, man, gotta make up for the fucking leaks and shit.
Yeah, and even, like, the one thing that really caught my attention this time around, and by the time this goes up, everybody's going to have seen it, was at GP Detroit, where they had an actual cathedral that you could go in. I think it was, like, a little room that you had to have a ticket to, right?
Yeah, I have no idea how it worked.
Okay, yeah, I don't know either, but anyways, Christine Sprinkle was there, you know, awesome Frank member of the community. Yeah, very, somebody we've had on this podcast, and somebody who is extremely sweet. And Spranks got to reveal the new Avacyn card by posing as Avacyn one day, and then coming out as her new card the next day with blood on her wings and everything. Yeah. And man, she looked fucking awesome. There's really no other way to put it than that. And that's before we even get to like all the other stuff they had going on at GP Detroit, where people were solving puzzles and they were in different languages. And just like, dude, the way they're handling this set, it tickles my flavor bone, because as somebody who doesn't play a lot anymore, I still really get into the lore, and even not that one. That's a wrap for the cast, Jeff. But I'm gonna start busting into Bone Thugs and Harmony if we keep going. let's tone that back. Oh, it's the thuggish, ruggish bone. Okay. But anyways, Innistrad is just this because they throw all the rules of design kind of to the side. And they just want to design this really cool set that's based around flavor. Like, there was a lot of people who pointed out some weaknesses in the previous Innistrad set. But to me, it made up for it because, like, you know, at the very least, even the most flavorful cards, like a Jar of Eyeballs and stuff like that, you could still do cool shit with them. I mean, I ran Jar of Eyeballs and Nath of the Guiltleaf for the longest time in Commander because it was amazing. And now we've got, like, Brain in the Jar and Tamio's Journal and just all this other stuff. But one of the biggest things I think to come out of this, and I do want to touch on this before we get into our anger and raging inferno shit, is, we actually have a mature female walker now. Like an older walker that's not just bloody ancient, like Liliana Vess. It's like an older lady that's a planeswalker, maybe. And did they actually reveal her card yet?
They haven't revealed the card, but the story is she's a planeswalker. Like, she was a werewolf, planeswalked away, couldn't change back unless she went back to Innistrad.
Oh, okay, cool, yeah. Cool.
And then figured out how to fucking control her shifting. It's kind of awesome.
Yeah, I read her story, and I have seemingly forgot all of that in the time it's taken for us to record this. But, the reason I think that this is very important, and this is going to kind of lead into some of the other stuff we're going to talk about tonight, representation is a very real thing in the game. And, you know, I think it's awesome that we are having a lot more diverse planeswalkers. You know, we've had, and, you know, characters as well. We have, just last year, we had our first trans character. We've had gender neutral characters. We've had, planeswalkers of all kinds of different skin colors, which is great. But, you know, we never really had, like, because there's a lot of older people that play this game too. I think people forget that. I mean, it's very common, especially when you run into like vintage and legacy groups, to have guys and women in their 30s and 40s who play the game. And we finally have like an older person walker. And that's cool for a diversity inclusion reason. But the other reason that's cool is, you know, every group needs their curmudgeon. Okay. Every group needs that older person that has seen some serious shit in their life. And Arlan Cord, I think, fits that bill perfectly.
Yeah. Especially after Origins, where it was just like Walker babies. Like,
yeah.
Oh, here's everyone, I guess, when they're 12, 13, and man, angsty teens. And it was fucking Planeswalker High.
Yeah, I mean, look, I get the kids were out for summer WotC. Oh, yeah. And, like, I get, that was such an underappreciated show. That show was so good.
Yeah, it sure
was. Yeah, like, I get that the kids were out for summer, but it's really nice to have, like, it's just nice to have an older person in the game, finally, that's a part of the story. Like, so, big props to WotC for that, big props for all of the marketing that's gone into Shadows over Innistrad. I even thanked Helen Bergio personally on Twitter. I don't know why I reached out to her in particular. Helen just seems one of the more approachable people.
Yeah.
Of course, then Mauro might not like talking to me because I called him daddy, so that might have something to do with it.
He's got kids. Well, it's weird because you're Daddy McCoy right now, so, like,
I don't know. Yeah, so I guess a daddy calling another person daddy does have some implications to it. But, so, anyway, speaking of Mero, did you see his thing today on, the What Kind of World You Want Next, where it was Noir World?
I've been following that bracket, because the first matchup, was handily won by Egypt World.
Yeah, that was just Sonya with, like, 9,000 bots, let's be honest. Like, if we're being completely sincere here, if there was a set that Sonya wanted printed more than any other one else, that's her wheelhouse.
Yeah.
I think it needs to happen. Like,
it totally needs to happen.
Dude, do you know how much cool shit could come out of an Egyptian world? Again. But anyways,
Also have like a little bit of throwback to Arabian Nights, like that set, like you just get to get a redo on that.
And actually make it like playable, there's lots of good stuff
that could come out Pyramid, of a card that does something, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, there's tons of good stuff that could actually come out of that. And but anyways, today the poll was between Wild West World and Noir World, which I'm gonna be honest, that was hard for me because I grew up watching cowboy movies, so I have a huge soft spot for, you know, John Wayne, Clint Eastwood, not you know who they were offset, but who they were on the screen, and that was hard for me. But I ended up going with Noir World, and I'm gonna tell everybody why. Investigation and clues are an actual mechanic in Shadows of Innistrad, and I know the bracket still has to finish out. But I honestly would like to see both of those mechanics return because I think they're really cool. And, you know, anything that allows you to draw cards is always good in my book.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's some interesting cards that are just going to be tests of that mechanic. Like, this one that's just like a 1/2 for one white that you get a clue. And, like, how much is just basically like 2 draw a card once per game on a 1-mana 1/2? Because 1-mana 1/2s are useless, generally, otherwise. But yeah. Is that enough?
And see, there's other things that come into play with that as well from a casual perspective, because clues are artifacts. Yeah. So, of course, like, as soon as I saw this, like, you know, my Shroom senses started tingling. And there's just a lot of cool stuff you could actually use the clues for outside of being able to crack them for a card. They have a lot of utility usage on top of being able to cantrip that is really appealing from, you know, a casual perspective and a competitive perspective. So I personally would love to see Noir World. I don't know how they would pull off Noir High Fantasy, but I think it would be really cool. I mean, you know, it's not like it would be the first time we've had guns and magic either. So, you know, whatever.
Get them hand crossbows.
Yeah, dude, get them automatic crossbows and frickin' laser bows or whatever you want to call it. Get all that crap out there. And it just, I think it would be cool. But Sonya did bring up a good point. We would have to find a way to have like a Venetian blind effect. Cause her and I were talking about this today. And, cause Sonya and I have big soft spots for Noir. And, she said, you know, like, when you're getting your sealed deck together, you should be like, oh God, just look at all this trouble that just fell into my lap. Something like that. And it just, I think it would be fun. And I will make a vow right now because, I think it's safe to say it's not going to pan out. If we end up getting a noir themed world, I will show up to some event in a trench coat with a trilby cocked for effect. You know, I'll find some way to just be smoking a cigar everywhere I go, and I will narrate all my actions at the GP in full minute. So there you go. It'll be like the best bad detective movie you guys have ever seen.
Oh, man.
So,
I'd be in on filming that, yeah. Though GP lighting is just a little too harsh, I think.
Well, I'm really, really pale, so you're just gonna get like this bright light in front of the camera the entire time. I have got a bit of a tan since summer started. I'm actually, working on losing some more weight by walking outside and planting a garden and garbage, so that's been fun. Been on the tractor a lot lately too.
Wait, what did you say about the summer? What?
I actually got a little bit of a tan because it's already 80 degrees here in North Carolina.
God damn motherfucker.
Dude, I'm telling you. But it's been weird because, like, we've had 80 degrees and then, like, we have to wake up and defrost our cars. So it's just, it's North Carolina weather, dude. I'm telling you, it's fucking weird down here.
We basically got all of our cold weather President's Day weekend and then it's been March since. So,
you know. Oh, that's awesome. Yeah. We, North Carolina, when March rolls around, we vary between, like, our summers, which can be 90 to 100 degrees and completely dry and just winds and thunderstorms. Like the end of the world is happening. So, you know, hey, I kind of understand why so many, Baptists are apocalyptical around here. But with that said, let's see, what else do we have to talk about? Do you have anything, Jeff?
What pisses you off, Jack? That's what this is about. You're fucking driving.
Okay. So I guess we can just go ahead and get into this topic. So, You know, there were several things I was going to talk about tonight, and there were a lot of them that I was going to single out, and I'm still going to single out a few of them. But the first thing I actually want to bring up that I think makes me the angriest, and like every fucking day, I still drag myself to it, and I still convince myself something good is going to fucking come out of this, and I'm going to really enjoy it, and it's going to be a good day, and I always walk away disappointed, hating myself for wasting my own time, and mad because of the complete sheer irrelevance of it. It's Twitter. And the reason I bring this up is because if you're listening to this podcast right now, or if you know anything about participating in the Magic community, you know Twitter is pretty much, it's where it's at. Like, it's where you're going to talk about Magic the most frequently with people. It's where you're going to engage with Mero and other people, Helen Bergio, all those awesome people. It's where you're going to get spoilers, because I promise you, you can get spoilers a hell of a lot quicker on Twitter than Mythic Spoiler or anybody else can get them up. It's where you're pretty much going to live if you're a Magic player and you want to talk about Magic. Now, before I delve further into this, I am going to admit a few outliers here. First of all, I am not like the typical Magic player. I'm well aware of that. I've been podcasting for 5 years. I have some kind of reputation in this community. I've got like 1,200 followers on Twitter, probably most of which are porn bots, I'm going to admit. But still, like I realize my net is cast a bit farther than some other people because I follow a huge variety of people on Twitter. I'm also going to admit that the things that are of concern to MTG Twitter are usually grossly irrelevant to the rest of the player base. So that's what makes all of this extra infuriating, because Twitter is kind of this forced communication medium that you have to participate in if you really want to be active in the community, that is a shitty, 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 shitty communication medium. And I know this because I actually had to write a thesis on it. So I was getting, and this is where I get into some technical mumbo jumbo about communication theory and before I outlay everything else. So when I was finishing up my college degree, I actually had to write a thesis on communication, some form of communication theory or communication channel for school, okay? And originally, I entitled the paper, you know, "Is Social Media an Effective Means of Communication?" Now, here's the thing you need to know about communication theory, kids. There's not a hell of a lot of science about it because it's a boring subject to almost everybody out there. And because there's not a lot of science behind it, a lot of people do not generally throw funding at it. The other thing is, a lot of what you read up on communication theory is a mix of quantitative with a lot of qualitative data because of what it is. So as I was doing my research, two websites in particular popped up immediately, and that's Facebook, and the other one was Twitter. And so as I was going through, I started realizing with these studies that what the researchers were actually implying was neither of these are very good because they are flawed mediums to start with. And if you've ever engaged in a discussion on Twitter, you know the limit of 140 characters plus just the structural way in which you engage in a conversation with somebody on Twitter is not conducive to actually having a good talk. And the reason, and this goes for Facebook as well, but the reason for that is you are in a public fucking forum. No matter who's on your feed, no matter who you're following, no matter who you're talking to on a daily basis, you are still on a public fucking forum unless you protect your tweets. Okay? And because of this, you can find literally anything on Twitter at just a moment's notice, and it can get all around a community immediately, and it can be taken out of context, and it can be used against you, or it can infuriate you, or it can help you with something. But the problem with Twitter is, because of the way it's built, 90% of the time, when you see shit going down on Twitter, it's going to immediately make you, as a person in a public forum, thinking that you are actually alone with the people in your feed, because that's what Twitter does, because of the way it's built, it forces you to think that you are alone dialoguing to either a group of people or just yourself, which it's called podium behavior, actually. It forces you to take the most knee-jerk reaction because you're limited to 140 characters. So most of the time, the things that get the most popular on MTG Twitter are spoilers, really, really, really good fucking articles like Abe Sargent's and On That Day Like Any Other.
Baseless speculation.
Or baseless speculation, people yelling about MTG finance, and completely crass offensive shit. And because completely crass offensive shit is by far the easiest thing to engage with, it's the most approachable because either you're an offensive person and you want to offend a lot of people, or because you're somebody who gets offended by this and you want to point out that people should be offended by this thing, it blows the fuck up and it completely dominates Twitter for like a goddamn hour, okay? And, you know, sometimes that's good. But here's the thing, Jeff, how do you start your morning out?
By making coffee.
Okay, yeah. You know, I kind of do the same thing. I get up, I got my acid jazz internal theme music playing. I get the baby up, feed her some breakfast, you know, take her to school, kiss my wife, go to work, make a little bit of coffee, and I'm feeling good. I'm feeling really great, right?
I don't do any of that shit for making coffee.
You don't have your own internal music?
I like take a piss and then put on the water for the coffee. Like that's how it starts.
Do you piss into the coffee? Okay, anyways.
No. I keep those activities separate.
So about this time, I'm like, oh, I bet something great's happening on Twitter. And you know, for like the first hour of every day, Twitter's pretty cool because everybody's waking up from slumber. Everybody's rubbing their eyes. People in Europe are still awake. And then one of the kids stumps their toe. Okay? And they scream and they cry about it. And the toe stump could be fucking anything. It could be, oh hey, oh my god, look at this completely junk rare card that shot up to $5 overnight because MTG Finance totally isn't a completely unregulated toxic pump and dump market. Or it could be, oh hey guys, look at this, it's a new spoiler. But 90% of the time, one of y'all motherfuckers has done something stupid, and even if I don't want to fucking look, I end up seeing it anyways, okay? Because everybody fucking retweets the shit out of everything you have to say. That's like, you know what? I didn't even know who the fuck Jordy Tate was like 5 years ago, okay? I didn't know that Jordy Tate was this hardcore, like, freaking Nazi-esque person that masquerades as a women's rights activist and hates women almost as much as he hates himself. I had no fucking idea who Jordy Tate was. And then one day, fucking Jordy Tate writes, oh my god, yeah, like, and then one fucking day, Jordy Tate writes this make-believe article to his make-believe daughter that doesn't exist and has never existed, and where he, like, references juggalos and all this other crazy shit. And he uses it as this, like, terrible, god-awful metaphor for how society treats women. And then, like, and really,
if you're writing an open letter to your hypothetical daughter, the only reason you should mention juggalos is as a stern warning to stay away from them.
Exactly. Okay. And so, like, I read that article and I was just like, huh, this guy's a dumbass, right? Yeah. Which is probably what most people should do when they see this shit. But no! Everybody on fucking Twitter knew about this, and it just, like, it pushed Jordy, it was the Streisand effect. It pushed Jordy Tate more into the fucking spotlight because nobody on Twitter knows that if somebody's fucking shitposting, you step back and you don't goddamn touch it, okay? That's how shitposting works. If somebody's shitposting, you back the fuck away. And so then, like, you know, I was like, well, this has to be the end of this villain, right? No. Every time Jordy Tate says something stupid, I find out about it. I don't even have to go looking for it. I just see it on Twitter. Because as a community, and this is the biggest sin of MTG Twitter, as a community, we don't know enough about self-control, first of all. Because the internet's forever, people. Anything you write on Twitter is going to be all over the goddamn planet. Okay? And it's always going to be there. It's never going to go away. Your kids are going to go back one day and find all the, like, several panels of MTG erotic fiction and art that you posted on your Twitter account before you podcasted because you didn't think it was a big deal and then everybody got offended. But anyways, like, so that shit's always going to be there. So maybe, you know, you should structure your feed to have less shit posting so these people get less attention and you don't have to see this shit, right? First of all. Secondly,
I think the hardest thing about Twitter is not engaging.
Yeah. And that's because, and this came up in my studies a lot too. Social media, when it first started, where it was like MySpace was actually just a very like overinflated bulletin board. Okay. But because of how social media has evolved into more of a instant messenger kind of approach, where you can get an instantaneous response, you don't have a fucking cooldown period. Like, nobody has a cooldown period to back away from the fucking computer and be like, maybe I shouldn't call that person a cunt. You know, like, that doesn't exist. And so...
Maybe.
Yeah. And so, like, all it takes is one person kicking the shitpost down the hill, and it just avalanches over a series of hours into this massive...
Yeah, the shit snowball effect, man.
Yeah, and it fucking avalanches into all this bullshit that is completely irrelevant. None of it fucking really matters most of the time, except with some of the things we're going to get to in a moment. And it also gives these people who start the shitpost a platform to keep shitposting because they get a goddamn reaction, and it just happens every fucking time. Like, there is no fucking reason... I know I am attacking the shit out of this guy, and he honestly was just the first example I thought of. It's nothing against him personally. Honestly, I find his Twitter feed amusing, but there's no fucking reason that like Jordy Tate gets as much attention as he does for the Nazi like shit that he says on Twitter every day. There's really not, except for the fact that we all retweet it because we want to point out how wrong he is. And
yeah, people have this. A very strong reflex to tell someone else that they're wrong.
Yeah, and see, like, here's the thing about that. People who are wrong, folks, and especially people who repeatedly shitpost, they don't give a shit that they're wrong. Like, every now and then, you know, like, I have said some really horrible shit before. I'm not gonna lie. There was a really terrible joke. Oh, yeah, not just like on this podcast, but like on Twitter, on Vine, on Monday Night Magic, on all kinds of places, I've said some really terrible shit. And I had people come out to me and be like, yo man, that's not cool. Can you please not say that? And because I am a normal goddamn human being, I was like, oh shit, I did not mean to offend you. I am very sorry about that. And they're like, that's cool, man. And you know, we shook hands and it was over, right? But the thing is, there are people who like, they came out of the womb mean mugging and shit posting. Okay? And they're gonna go to the grave, like, you know, raising their fist about whatever thing makes them angry until the day they die. And no matter how much you as a member of the community might want to point out that somebody is wrong, it honestly is better just to walk the fuck away and go back to the spoilers, or go back to talking about Egyptian shit with Sonya, or just whatever.
Mute them, unfollow them, get them out of your fucking sight.
Yeah, but see, like, here's even, like, the bigger problem, because, like, because of retweets, because of favorites, because of Twitter structure, again, it's like a fucking game. Like, they gamified having arguments with people by creating Twitter. And, like, that's really why the fuck everybody participates in it. Even, like, me, every fucking day, I rant about something. I know I do, and I know I annoy the ever-loving piss out of everybody when I get on my high horse. But it's fun, and I actually derive pleasure from belittling shit that is going on. And sometimes, you know, I do feel like it's constructive. But, like, today, I ranted about Lionhead Studios closing. Like, Microsoft actually decided to end Fable Legends or whatever the fuck online bullshit it was. Mm. And I laughed at that because even though, like, it's bad those people are losing their jobs, nobody remembers Peter Monoloxi. Nobody does. Because that was 10 years ago in the gaming community, but Peter Monoloxi hyped the fuck out of every single game he made, and he acted like his studio was going to last forever. And I innately had to point out how much of a buffoon Peter Monoloxi was, right? And it was, like, it felt good to do this on Twitter because of how it's structured out. And that's toxic. Like, that's toxic behavior, not just because, like, everybody in your community is going to see you acting like a pantsless jackass, but it's toxic to you anyways because, despite what you think, you're going to take the way you act on social media and do it elsewhere. Like, if you enjoy being a smarmy jerk on Twitter, there's going to come a day where you really want to be the smarmy jerk in real life. And so there's so much more shit that comes out of retweeting shitposting and engaging with shitposting and just, like, feeding that ever-loving need to point out how wrong people are on Twitter, that's going to affect you in a very negative sense. Like, the community at large, first of all, is at fault because we collectively need to really sit the fuck down and prioritize why it's so important to argue with these motherfuckers on Twitter. Because you know what? Sometimes there are times when people are wrong. Okay? Sometimes there genuinely are times that people are acting like complete and utter jackasses, and there's constructive ways to handle that. One of the infamous moments from the last month that I witnessed was there was a guy, Aaron Forsyth, was talking about inclusivity in magic. And again, like, no matter, you know, if you're a fucking Nazi, if you are a just, you know, very inclusive kind of person, regardless of how you feel, inclusivity is important to the health of magic, not just because it's important to show gamers that all walks of life can play this game, but because, and I'm going to be completely blunt here, and this is going to be one of the things that probably gets me in trouble, inclusivity makes games appear approachable, which also leads to bigger sales. Okay? And I know that's a really horrible thing to say there, but it's true. The more approachable people feel that a certain media is, the more likely they are to engage with it. It's kind of like, like I was just saying, we have a lot of older people who play this game too, and having an older walker, that's cool, because, you know, what if we have the one older lady who plays Legacy, right? And she sees there's kind of this smirking older woman in the new set. Like, she's going to want to kind of engage with the new set a little bit, right? So that's a good thing. And this guy decided to point out that, well, we shouldn't have inclusivity for inclusivity's sake. It's kind of like having women who are fighting. It makes no fucking sense because women didn't fight in ancient times. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, that's just one of those.
Most wrong opinions ever. Okay, yeah.
One of those things that's just patently false. And...
Yeah, so my immediate response to this was, I quoted the tweet, and then in quotation marks I put, I have never read a history book in my entire fucking life. And folks at home, the reason that this guy is wrong, and the reason that there are constructive ways to point out how he was wrong, is because every single culture that has ever been at war, which is literally every single human being culture on the entire face of the planet, has had both men and women fighting. Okay?
Even when it was most rare, exceptional things make good stories.
That's the other thing, too. Regardless of, you know, if, like, let's take I'm trying to think of a certain culture. Let's take something like Native American culture, which I know very little about, and I'm really hoping I don't offend anybody with this. Yes, it was very typical for the men to go out and, you know, do war
stuff. This week on White Guys Talk About Cultures They Don't Know About.
But, you know, it was very typical for the male members of the tribe to go out and do war, do negotiations, that kind of thing. And very often you did have the women who did the textile work would be the easiest way to put that, and raising the children and stuff like that. But in times of war, it was not uncommon for the women to go fight as well. And, you know, if you want to be completely honest, when we entered into World War I and World War II, we had a lot of women who actually joined the battlefront. And we're not talking like exceptional stories. We're talking like everyday women who went to go be nurses, be surgeons, be gunners, be, you know, transportation people. And like, this was a real thing that was going on. Even if they never hefted a weapon, they still went to war, you know? So I decided to point this out to this gentleman. And then he was like, well, in, you know, fantasy
fantasy worlds that aren't real.
Yeah. And here's another reason that, you know, let's say we pull away from reality and we're going to look at, you know, fantasy, okay? Some of the most terrifying fucking things in fantasy are women. And the reason I'm going to say that is, first of all, we have a very patriarchal culture that, you know, regardless of where you came from, there is a very deep-seated fear of women who grow too powerful. One of the best examples I can think of this is, in fantasy especially, is Baba Yaga. Jeff, do you know the legend of Baba Yaga?
Yeah.
Okay. Baba Yaga was a immortal cannibalistic witch that lived in a hut that had chicken's feet, and she is from Russian folklore. Now, why Baba Yaga was so goddamn... Yeah?
Yeah, it's where the Hansel and Gretel myth comes from, too. Like, it's the same sort of...
A lot of the... Yeah, precisely. A lot of the things that actually where it's the archetypal witch, you know, the archetypal scary woman that lives in the woods, a lot of that shit came from Baba Yaga. Baba Yaga, from a fantasy standpoint, is fucking terrifying because she could just kill you or eat you, or she might help you because she just feels like it that day. So we have Baba Yaga. We have tons of different iterations of Red Riding Hood, who in some versions of the story actually kills the wolf and becomes this very strong, very scary huntress type person. Mm-hmm. In popular American mythology, God, how many female superheroes do we have now? You know, how many female assassins and stuff and stories have we had over the various years? Regardless of what side of the argument you stand on here.
Yeah, historically, like the, you know, the better known ones are like Joan of Arc. There's also, Boadicea, who was, Scottish Celtic warrior woman who fucked.
I know who you're talking about. Yeah,
yeah.
And you know what? They had women working on.
Really, not very good movie about her, but Warrior Queen with, but it's with Alex Kingston, so fuck yeah, like it's kind of worth it just for that.
Yeah, and see, like the other thing about that is, not only were they women of power who, you know, went to war and, you know, participated in violence and definitely hefted a weapon. They probably had women working under them. You know, they probably had women warriors working with them. Mm-hmm. You know, there's also the perpetuated myth of Amazonian tribes, you know, that started up during the 40s. That was based on a real account of a real tribe of all women who actually went to war with other tribes. So regardless of where this guy stood, this was incredibly anger inducing. But was there a constructive way to solve the problem? No, there totally wasn't, because this guy is a lifelong shit poster. But he got tons of attention for being a shit poster, and it started the whole shit avalanche on Twitter. Was it fun to make fun of him? Oh, yeah, totally. It was totally rewarding to make fun of him. But the guy walked away from Twitter and probably didn't give a flying fuck. And that's part of the problem with every single argument you get in with on Twitter, even if you have a point behind it. Because sometimes it's just not going to be worth it. Nothing, no good is going to come out of it. You're not going to be able to educate the person. And it's really just going to lead to everybody kind of patting themselves on the back that they beat the big bad wolf that day. But every now and then, Jeff, you get to see, like, have you ever, like, seen a real disaster? Like a tornado or a dam collapsing or anything like that?
Not really, no. Not up and close.
Like, really?
The closest would have been, like, the main ice storm back in, like, 96 that fucked a lot of shit up, but, you know.
Yeah.
Nothing, like, super catastrophic and sudden.
So, I have. I've seen some beautiful disasters in my life. My favorite of all time has to be the time, and I've told this story before, where me and Tiff and Riley and Riley's grandfather were all cooking burgers outside one summer, having a good day, and down the hill, I saw my neighbor's garage blow up, and it just, like, you know, the roof shot into the sky, shit was flying up in the air. We all got inside. Everybody was safe. And the reason for it was the guy had a still in his garage that he kept in our fertilizer. Okay. So yeah, that happened. But, and as scary as that was, as terrible as that was, there was something beautiful about watching it unfold before my very eyes. Okay. Like it was something I know that I'm only going to really see every now and then. So I need to, like, savor every moment of it, you know, like a sweet piece of candy just on the tip of your tongue. So then that leads me to my other thing that happened. And you folks are probably going to notice a pattern in tonight's stories. Okay. There was this guy where I think it was, it might've been Melissa Del Toro. I don't actually remember what female player it was. But there was a female player. It was Del Toro. Okay.
No.
D-E. It wasn't?
T-O-R-A. Let's just get her name right.
Okay. So it was her. And she was wearing a, she was at a Star City Games event, and she was wearing a tank top on camera. Okay. And so this guy decided to be like, man, it's kind of scummy of SCG to have the camera right on her. Okay. So I'm going to be a bit crude here, folks. If you've ever seen a woman in a tank top, you know tank tops on women come in one of two varieties. Either it's the too small tank top, where you are going to have to try really, really hard to, like, keep eyes locked on their eyes while you're conversing with them. Or it's, like, the respectable, you know, it was hot outside today tank top. Okay? And Datora was wearing the respectable kind. So she wasn't she, you know, nothing was hanging out, nothing was like being, you know, seen or anything like that. But because of the position of the camera, it did look like she had cleavage. Okay. And so
Holy
this guy
shit, women
this.
Have cleavage. Klaxons, yeah. Alarms, bells, dogs barking, sound effects that I'm not going to add. Yeah.
Yeah, and so this guy decided to go out of his way to point out, well, you know, I can't believe she's wearing this on camera. And so somebody responded with, well, she can wear whatever the fuck she wants. You know, what's your problem, dude?
Yeah,
she's
engage with that and said exactly the same thing. Like,
yeah. And so then this guy was like, because he just thought nobody saw this shit. But again, folks, when you're on Twitter, you're not engaging with a small group of people. You are engaging with everybody and their fucking brother. Okay? He was like, well, you know what? That's fine. I like to wear Speedos on cam. Ho, 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 ho. So then immediately Twitter just like gang jumps this dude. Like out of nowhere, there's people dropping out of the trees. You know, people are coming around corners, like clacking bottles together in cars and shit. And all of a sudden this guy realizes he done fucked up. And so he immediately tries to backpedal. And he's just like, well, think of the kids that are watching coverage.
Yeah. When those people try to dig up, it never works out. They say something even worse. Yeah, like that.
Yeah, they honestly think they're like they're digging down, right? They're digging down in their hole. And somebody's like, hey, man, it looks like you're digging a grave. And they look up and they see sunlight. But they still convince themselves, if I dig this hole deep enough, I'll see the sun on the other side, right? Yeah. So they just keep digging deeper. And the guy said, think of the children. Now, first of all, I am somebody who, especially now that I actually have a child, I really fucking hate the think of the children excuse. Because literally every single time the think of the children excuse is used, it's by people who probably don't have kids, first of all. And it's by people who, what they really want to do when they say think of the children is they really are saying, yeah, I want to control what's going on. This is out of my control, so I'm going to use this pillow fort to protect myself, right? So here's the thing about why this guy is a fucking idiot, but it was beautiful to watch it all unfold. First of all, realistically speaking, how many fucking kids really watched Magic coverage at all whatsoever? Like, poll the audience, okay?
If kids of a young age, like, don't sexualize boobs. Like, that's not a thing that they get until they're older.
That's what I was getting into, too. Okay, so, you know, as I've said before on this cast, I'm a big guy, I got man tits, I'm not afraid to show them off, what about it? And, which you can see me shirtless on Twitter sometimes, if you really want to. So, you know, I have man boobs, and, Tiffany is a, my wife is very well proportioned in her chest area, I guess is the best way to put that. Yeah, and, you know, so my daughter has seen me shirtless, and she's seen her mother shirtless, you know, when we're getting dressed. And you know what? She doesn't freak out if she sees her mom's boobs. Okay?
Yeah. Kids will do, like, if you don't control them, they'll just run around naked. Like, that's their natural state,
yeah.
And they will revert to that.
Yeah, the moment Riley is home, bam, out of the uniform, in her underwear. I'm lucky if she's wearing a shirt most days, you know?
Especially down there where it's fucking 80 degrees in March, you fucking asshole.
Oh, dude, we just let her run around the house. You know, we make her put a shirt on if company's coming over, but holy fuck, it's way too hot for that shit out here. So anyways, kids just, they don't pay attention to boobs. Like, the first time, like, she saw her mom shirtless, she looked at them and she goes, squishies. And she like patted them, right? And then it was over. And that was the end of it. And so, like, the only way that Riley even like knows what boobs are and that there's differences in boobs is because I just have coarse black chest hair. Okay. So I had to explain to her why my squishies had hair on them instead of mama's, right? But
that's
like,
a fun conversation.
So, yeah, and so, like, the argument for the children when it comes to people's bodies, it's just dumb on its face because kids really don't know what the fuck they're looking at, okay? Because horrible, like, conservative, I really don't want to use the word conservative, but, like, society forces body image and other thoughts like that into them as they get older, and, like, society really teaches people shame. I guess is the best way to say that.
Yeah.
It teaches people, you know, hey, girls, you need to cover your bare shoulders and all this stuff, or you might just have some man that gets sexually attracted to you because all men are animals. Hey guys, your dick's not big enough. Aha, whatever. So first of all, that's a dumb argument to start with anyways. And the other thing is, when you actually use the phrase for the children and you try to establish something as an adult for the children, what you're actually doing is denying those kids a chance to be comfortable, especially like in this case, with their own bodies. So that's a really fucking dumb argument on its face anyways, because, you know, while we've made a lot of strides, especially as a magic community, especially with MTG Fit, especially with the focus on, you know, a lot of people, like all our weightlifting buddies we've had here on the cast and stuff like that, especially with me and you trying to keep our New Year's vows and all that shit, which, how's the cheese? How's the cheese?
Eating lots of cheese. It's delicious.
Awesome, yeah. Mm. I actually lost 10 pounds, by the way. Speaking nice. Of New Year's vows. Yeah, I'm down nice. From 250 to 240. I feel really good about that. Like, we're a very, like, body-positive group, but kind of like, you know, when you say this kind of shit, it really reinforces those negative viewpoints on body and perception, and it teaches people to fear their own flesh, which, that leads into so many other horrible things, as not just in the magic community, but, like, with all the other shit going on in the world at large. So using the excuse for the children in regards to bodies is terrible. It's literally the worst thing as a adult you can say. So, yeah.
Hey, think of the children. We haven't ruined them yet.
Yeah, think of the children
shame
you
them
haven't
into, made. Like, yeah, hating like, themselves.
That's really what it is, though. Like, when adults do this kind of shit to kids, what you're really teaching them, like, a lot of adults, and I'm just going to say it, we're all bitter, self-loathing people because, you know, we're not pretty enough. We don't make enough money. We don't do this or that. But, like, what you're really doing when you do this shit to kids is you're teaching them just to be as fucking self-loathing as you. And do you really want your kids to grow up being like that? I fucking don't. Riley loves life, and I want to teach her to love everything about fucking life. And so, like, when I see this shit, I just want to, like, grab this person by the shoulders and be like, never reproduce, you know, ever.
You're
going to throttle
them like
ever.
Charlie Brown style.
Oh, yeah, oh my god. Oh man, I'm actually sweating, because I'm like so, like, the rage is pouring out of my pores now, and it's just so fucking much. Mm. Alright, the coffee will temper me. And, again, the only way that this beautiful disaster happened is because of how Twitter's set up. Like, there's so many sins that MTG Twitter commits on a daily basis that it just, anyways. So.
It's an inexhaustible resource.
Yeah.
If we can harness the power of people reacting to shit posts and bad opinions, we could accomplish so much.
Think of how many engineering marvels we could have accomplished by now. Like, I was talking about this with my dad the other day. He was like, you know, I wonder, like, how much time every day, like, Tesla and those kinds of people had to devote to their efforts. I was like, Dad, they couldn't argue on the internet. Like, they had all the fucking time in the world. Look at all the shit they accomplished. So anyways, this brings me to my last moment of complete and utter Twitter bullshit rage. So Christine Sprankle, again, was at GP Detroit this weekend, looked totally fucking badass.
Yeah.
And had a great time, you know, was well received by the community. And, you know, I'm really proud that Christine has become such a forefront for, like, creative types and cosplayers and just, like just a good source of free advertisement for WotC, I guess is the best way to put that. Like, Christine's awesome. She loves what she does. And, you know, she's, like, happy to engage with the nerds in the community, which is extra awesome. So Christine Sprankle went to GP Detroit, had a badass time, looked badass as always.
Yep.
And came home, and a certain Twitter user, I'm not going to say them because I think they're actually married to somebody else who is fairly prominent in the community, made the post that I'm fairly irritated that WotC can afford to hire and fly a cosplayer out, but cannot afford to pay people who scored 12-3 at GP Detroit. And Christine, of course, responded with, I don't really know how to respond to this. All right, so here's something very, very
things going on there. One, those two budgets are not connected. Like, the marketing budget and the organized play, like, GP payout budget are not connected in any way. Like, those are separate departments. They're in the same event, but they're not connected.
Yeah. And, like, they're not connected at all whatsoever by any kind of stretch of the imagination. Yeah. And the other thing going on here that, again, is a major sin of MTG Twitter. It's such a big fucking deal. And everybody has had this happen to them at one point or another. Is it's displaying your willful ignorance of subjects to the general populace. Mm-hmm. And then getting angry when people point out your complete and utter ignorance of subjects. Now,
getting
here's the thing.
Angry when you get called on your bullshit. Oh.
Yeah, like, and see, you know, here's the thing, and this is something very important I always want to preach to people about, you know, things they don't know. I'm not just Jack by name, I'm Jack by trade, too, because I know a whole lot of shit about a whole lot of bullshit. I'm a jack of all trades and a master of absolutely squat shit. And so when I'm talking on Twitter, and I say something, and I really don't know what the fuck I'm talking about, and, you know, somebody decides to correct me on that, like Mike Linneman today, he tweeted something by, I think it was Wayne Reynolds, a piece of art that he did, and I tweeted back at him, I was like, man, you know, is Innistrad just channeling some Bloodborne here? Because that's really, like, what Innistrad feels like to me, is they're really pulling in references from Bloodborne. Mm-hmm. And he was like, actually, this is Wayne Reynolds style. Here's a Google link to a whole bunch of his shit. And so I got informed, and I was like, cool, I learned something. But when
and
that happens...
I'll say that they definitely draw on similar source materials from what I've seen of Bloodborne. Like, the
oh,
setting
yeah.
is
like,
pretty similar, is the same sort of...
Yeah, one of the...
aesthetic, yeah.
Yeah, one of the church purifiers that got spoiled today, they had the pointy hat, and all I could think of was the pointy gold hat that the church wears in Bloodborne, right? So anyways, when you are willing to be humble and admit your own ignorance, you can learn so much more, and you can enrich yourself as a person so much more. And I'm going to be honest, I'm ignorant as fuck, but I always have new opportunities to learn. And that's awesome, because I am willing to admit when I'm fucking wrong about something, okay? As is Jeff, as is most normal goddamn people on MTG Twitter. But it's the people who completely and utterly refuse to look at all objective evidence in their face, literally coming down by the 50 tweet load in their feed about how wrong they are.
Yeah, they immediately get defensive, and then once you get defensive, like, it's kind of over. Like, you can't see past that.
Anger leads to hate, and hate leads to leaving Twitter for a day. And see, like, that was what makes this whole, you know, brand new drama so fucking tragic is, first of all, again, the woman had, excuse me, I probably said too much there. The person in question had absolutely no knowledge of how fucking tournament structure and budget is paid out. Christine is actually advertisement, and she gets paid out of the advertisement budget. It has nothing to do with any, it's marketing. It's literally Watsy being like, here's an NDA, here's a paycheck, go do your thing. Okay. Has nothing to do with the tournament payout. But what makes this even better is when you engage in this kind of willful ignorance, it completely discounts the efforts of other people. Because I'm going to go ahead and say this. You know what?
Also,
Christine has been...
It's kind of blaming the wrong person. Like,
yeah, absolutely.
You know, just because one person got paid, it's not their fault that someone else didn't get paid. Like,
yeah, absolutely true. Because you know what? First of all, the person in question could have just played harder. I hate to put it that way, but it's absolutely true.
Like,
and the other thing that's...
There's plenty of valid complaints about price structure at GPs. It hasn't scaled to the size of modern GPs. Like, it's kind of still based on... Like, even when they have scaled it up, it's still, like, doesn't really account for, like, 4,000 player events. Like, it kind of scales... Like, there's a threshold at, like, 2,400 players that it, like, bumps up a bit, but... You know, if it's half again as much, it doesn't tick up again. So, like, there's a legit question, you know, issues with that and with, you know, tournament organizers. There was a kind of a horror story from someone who had an issue with, I think, the person in charge at that event, that I won't get into too much detail about. It's on Reddit. It was kind of nasty, but, and makes me not want to go to events run by, CES, but, like, there are those issues. Christine has nothing to do with those. There's no reason to bring her into it.
Yeah, and see, like, here's the other funny part about this. Like, let's toss Christine's part of this completely out of the window. Mm-hmm. You still have the facts that, according to Nick Packard, which is Meows a Lot on Twitter, And I'm quoting here from what he told me. I have no way to know if this is true or not, but I'm guessing that it did because of all the responses this person got to their tweet. Little did this person know, all 12 threes got paid. Two 11 fours got paid, out of 100 got paid as well.
So they were also so, just wrong.
Yeah. So like, not only are you blaming the wrong person and being completely ignorant of how this shit works in the first place, you're ignoring blind facts that actually affect your situation. And Twitter, again, allows this kind of willful ignorance because we as human beings, our first reaction when somebody tells us we're wrong, instead of humbling ourselves and being like, oh shit, maybe I need to open my brain up and close my mouth, is to just knee-jerk react because of the way Twitter is built. It's, we want to let these other people know that fuck you, I'm more right than you are, because of how we've gamified dialogue.
Yeah. And it's a lot easier to type your gut reaction and send than do 5 seconds or 30 seconds of research.
Yeah. And
like it's pretty easy to, you know, Google like MTG GP payout and figure out.
Exactly. Like,
that stuff's pretty readily available.
Yeah, like information is available. Like you are literally living in an era where a fucking computer is on your waist that you can
pick access up to all of use human fucking knowledge at any time.
Yeah, I mean, you can look up everything from GP standings to how much the GP is going to pay out to fucking, you know, porn to Wikipedia articles about mysterious deaths to whatever. And you you don't want to use it. And like, honestly, that's the thing that I think infuriates me the most out of all of these stories, regardless of, you know, how you look at it or how you dice it. We have this really amazing tool. We really do. Twitter is awesome. And every day, no matter how much I want to scream at the top of my lungs every time I start reading Twitter, like, I pull myself back to it because it's a really good tool and it allows you to connect with people and share information and learn and all this other stuff. And we waste it. We waste it on completely irrelevant arguments. We waste it on being horrible fucking people to one another. And it just keeps going, Jeff. Mm-hmm. Yeah, this episode really didn't have a point. But we needed to record tonight, and I've had all this rage built up, so.
Yeah, I mean, I have no end of good things to say about Twitter, and have had countless positive experiences and results from Twitter. Like, I'm gonna be going to GP Minneapolis, because, like, you know, aforementioned Mike Lindman put out a shout-out to just Minneapolis Magic people, and was like, you know, who in the area would put Jeff up? You know, because Mike was committed to, you know, put up people who are all, I would willingly give up a spot, even if I had gotten dibs first. I'd be like, no, Durfington, seriously, stay with Mike, do it. But, like, you know, people I have no qualms being ahead of me on, you know, getting dibs on crashing with someone. And like three people responded. Like, you know, one of which I was familiar with, like, and that was Hobbs. So like a couple of people that, like, I didn't follow yet on Twitter and that didn't follow me, and you know, making connections like that.
Yeah, and even like, you know, for me, I mean, there's a lot of days I get on Twitter and I could be very depressed that day. And I could say, and you know, I could shoot off at the lip or be smarmy or something like that. And then somebody will shoot me a DM and be like, hey man, are you okay? Are you feeling all right? And that's nice, man. Like, it's nice to have those kinds of people right at your fingertips who genuinely give a shit and want to make sure you're all right or help get you to a GP or what the fuck ever. Mm-hmm. And to use Twitter in the way that the Magic community has used it is completely fucking infuriating. Like, oh my god, I even forgot this fucking Twitter story, and I have to say this shit because this shit makes me angry. Okay.
All right. So there's some positivity. We had a brief positivity interlude. Now back to the rage.
Yeah, okay, no, I have to do this. All right. You know what one of my favorite games is on Twitter, Jeff?
Posting boobs?
No, I mean, I post name a lot of tits, boob? But no. My no. My boob? Favorite... No. Shut up. No, one of my favorite games to actually play on Twitter is How Quick Until MTG Finance Gets Angry. And the easiest way to do this is, it doesn't matter how you phrase it, it doesn't matter what you say, it doesn't matter if it's like about a card or just in general, just say something bad about the secondary market and put MTG Finance on it. You can set your clock to how quick somebody will respond to it and just jump all over your goddamn ass, right? So I do this about once a week just because it's so much fun. It is so much fun to see these people get this fucking tore up over what is shit I'm obviously saying that is a fucking joke. So one time I tweeted something like, it's the year 2016 and you're still pretending that MTG Finance isn't a shark tank filled with piranhas and they've already smelled your blood or some shit like that. And this guy responded with, why would piranhas be in a shark tank? And so I responded back to him and I was like, it was an obvious hyperbolic joke. And he was just like, okay. And I was like, okay. Yeah. And so a literal real world 7-day, 24 hours every day week passes. And this completely other fucking guy, responds to it and he's like, leave it to Jack LaCroix to start bitching about the secondary market and how it's ruining the game. And I had no idea where this was coming from by this point, right? So I had to view the conversation. And I was like, dude, you're being really salty. And he was just like, oh yeah, got any other completely irrelevant arguments to throw back at me? And so I responded back with, you're responding to a tweet that is over a week old. These are moments of your life you are never getting back. Your hairline is receding and life is leaving your body right now. Do you really want to keep this going? And then he stopped. And then a week later.
It's one of those things where the good result is when you say something and they do stop. When you have to block them is when they fall, when they won't let it go and fall up. And that's normal. But, I won't go into detail.
Oh, no. This story continues. This story continues. This was a month long 6-comment Twitter fight. Okay. So another week goes by and the original guy who made...
I'm on the shitter. I got 10 minutes to spare.
Yeah. So another week passes by and the guy who originally responded to the tweet was just like, I have couples counseling if you guys need it. Finn. Done. That's why everybody should get on Twitter. The episode. Shit. Do we have anything else we want to talk about?
So a couple of Twitter things. We did mention that, on the previous episode, we did mention the amazing tweet that came out of the whole vendor leaks, which was the Go Fuck Yourself Hot Pockets. That was beautiful. And a similar thing, a couple of days later, that someone retweeted David Levitt accidentally, not knowing what they were doing. And it was beautiful how everyone fucking dogpiled on it.
Yeah.
My response was just that he's useless and doesn't add any value. And everyone else just dogpiled on, he's a piece of shit, worthless human being.
It's kind of like sitting back and watching an A-bomb go off when that happens. Oh, it really is. Yeah. And you can't do anything about it, so you just ride the cloud and watch the storm, God, I'm trying to think if there's anything else I want to talk about this episode. Archer is starting back soon. And I do want to talk about this, and this is Twitter related, so this will be interesting.
All right.
So, this has been, the month of, everybody trying to appeal to my fetishes in my Twitter feed. Because, WotC comes out with the MILF werewolf, right?
Yeah.
Totally rubs the MILF boner, totally rubs the monster girl boner. And the Archer ad campaign for whatever, I guess because Pam is actually going to play a important role in the new season, they've been having Pam Poovy, the chunky, blonde-headed, very stacked, office lady, who I think is screwing around with Archer sorta, in swimsuits, for their weeks leading up to the new season of Archer. And that's just everything I want out of a ad campaign. Chunky, beautiful women. I am totally okay with that. So, that happened. And, let's see if there's any other interesting Twitter things going on.
It's one of these things that it started on Reddit, spilled over to Twitter. That's how these things generally work. There's people complaining about Noah Bradley charging $1 for signatures.
Oh my god, how did I forget about that? Yeah, okay.
Anyone complaining about that, one, can go fuck themselves. And two, all of Mark Aronowitz's clients, which is a large stable at this point, charge $2. And it's 100% fucking worth it. If you weren't giving artists, at least 50 cents per signature already, you were doing it wrong. It's much better to have, just a standard codified, there's a price for signatures, and that's how it works. There's no fucking around with unwritten rules about what's, the proper amount to tip and whatnot. There's not all country, tipping isn't a custom in all countries, so let's just have it be written, clear, up front. Pay for sketches, you pay for doodles, you pay for signatures, and there's amounts for it. Pay your artists, people. They're part of the experience.
You know the one thing that I think a lot of people completely forget about this too? Money equals time, people. Okay? And Noah, or any of the artists, really, are taking time out of their life to sign your complete commander deck that you have, or however many hundreds of cards you want to have them sign. So you know what?
Your 75-card Vintage Artist Constructed deck.
Or, yes.
I need to give Eric Deschamp even more money. I really do.
But, they're taking time out of their life to sit there and sign all of your shit while you build the lineup. And so it's, why not give them some kind of fucking compensation? And the thing that came out of this was the guy who actually posted the angry thing on Reddit was like, well, you got a commission. Okay, look. Go talk to a fucking artist on Twitter. Yeah. There's tons of them out there. Polish Tamales, fucking Steve,
Go spend your life becoming an artist and, live on artist commissions. Yeah.
Yeah, the commission doesn't fucking go anywhere. And the other thing is, I don't know what the cost of the average GP is for you people, but, Noah got his comp, his flight comped, right? Mm-hmm. Okay, a hotel is still anywhere between $200 to $600 if you don't bunk with anybody. And then you still gotta have money to go get food. You still gotta have money to get around. You still have to have money to, if you're an artist and you're probably gonna try and schmooze with other artists, some way to entertain them, either with alcohol or whatever. Okay? So how many of you can just toss that kind of money out of your pocket? Mm-hmm. Nobody.
It's something that and also I think there's this misconception because, and I think we've touched on this at some point in the past that it used to be that when an artist was in an event, they, their hotel and airfare was all covered, and they often also were given an appearance fee of some sort, and those benefits have been cut back over the years. And to the point where an artist is lucky if they get their airfare covered. A year ago there was rumblings about TOs wanting to charge them vendors, and charge them for table space, which is utter bullshit. And I think it's something unspoken threat was what I think kept a lot of artists from charging directly for signatures. But yeah, that's bullshit. There's also there's these kind of absurd limitations on what they can sell, which actually, and this is fantastic positive news, that Wizards is relaxing, that they're at least on kind of a case by case basis allowing artists to print playmats of their old art. I'm guessing nothing super recent, but older stuff that they found a way in the Ultra Pro contract to allow artists to do that in some cases. So
yeah, and that's awesome because the thing that a lot of people forget here too is because those benefits have been cut back, it has to be interacting with the community is great. Everybody wants to interact with the community, but if you're coming back in the red when you go to a GP as an artist, how are you going to live? How are you going to pay rent? How are you going to buy groceries? How are you going to be able to afford to go to the next GP if you're in the red every time you come back? So there's that, okay? But the other thing I want to mention here, too, is giving Noah Bradley $1 just to have him for a moment and tell him personally I think his art is the fucking bomb, that's worth it to me, okay?
Yeah.
Is it really that?
That's the other thing. Yeah, for me, it's about the experience with the artist. And that's what you're talking about. It's saying hi, talking to them, and $1 is nothing.
And you know what? $1 for just a moment of their time to be able to express to them personally how much you enjoy it, that's nothing, dude. You can't even get a fucking Big Mac for that anymore in this country.
You can't get a bottle of water for that at most convention centers.
Yeah, and I think the longest I've ever stood in line to talk to a creator about something was I stood in line an hour just to tell Mike Mignola how much his comic meant to me, Hellboy. Okay? Mm-hmm. And, you know, that made his day, but I still gave him some money, even though I didn't have him sign anything, because I was just happy he was there. And it's worth it to buy a little bit of time sometimes if you want that experience. And there's nothing wrong with that, you know. And so Noah Bradley to say, hey, if you want a card signed, it's $1 to both keep the line moving, make a little bit of extra pocket money, and just have a flat standard rate. I have no fucking problem with that because he's going to be able to afford to come to the next GP and interact with people again. That's totally fucking cool with me. Mm-hmm. All right. It's getting late. I'm starting to get exhausted from ranting. So... The last kind of...
Another thing about signatures is, you know, I talked to Mark, and the reason he started charging for signatures is that, you know, he'd have guys, you know, get a stack of cards signed, and he'd go look at eBay later that night and see all those cards on eBay at, like, a premium.
Yeah.
So you're getting value added to your cards directly. Like, I know there's some vendors that will be dickish about signatures, but if you're not dealing with vendors and you're dealing with, you know, actual collectors and stuff and dealing with, you know, people in the Magic community, some people don't give a shit about them. Some vendors mark them down. Most people, it adds value. And especially long term, it'll add value. So.
Oh yeah. And, I mean,
you know, when you have to pay to get them, that immediately adds value. So.
Precisely.
So shut the fuck up.
Yeah, precisely.
Pay the man. Agree.
Let the man eat, you fucking heathens. All right, so anyways, I do have one last positive thing I want to say before we sign off here, because we've had a lot of fucking vitriol come out, and this is either going to be like the episode where we lose all of our listeners or we gain a shit ton of them. So anyways, Riley here recently, because she's had to be indoors a lot from being sick. We've been watching a lot of cartoons, but it's like I've said before, there's only so many goddamn hours of edutainment you can take, right? And so on a whim one day, I saw
only
that Pokemon
so much
was on
the pirate, Jake and the Neverland Pirates you can consume in one sitting.
She's never seen that, and I'm keeping her away from that. That and fucking Caillou.
No,
Caillou bugs
actually,
the shit out of her.
My sister-in-law is a kid who's like 2, and Jake is really good. And teaches, like, fundamentals of role-playing games.
Oh, that's
cool. Because they, like, collect, like, coins and stuff along the way. And then they divvy up the loot at the end.
So oh,
like,
that's
you accomplish
cool.
things,
that's awesome.
Get loot, and divvy it up. It's like,
That's pretty fucking cool. I like that.
Yeah.
But, like Caillou, dude, Caillou is so fucking toxic. Because he just gets to be a little dick. And it doesn't matter what Caillou does, Caillou gets away with it. I still think he grows up to be Walt from Breaking Bad, but that's beside the point. Okay, so just on a whim, I saw that Pokemon was on Netflix, right? And I was like, oh god, this is gonna be like new Pokemon, I'm not gonna know what the shit's going on, blah, 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 blah. But no, it was the original Pokemon series, right? And so I put it on, and like I don't know how old you were when Pokemon first became a big thing, Jeff, but like if you were a kid, like, say what?
No idea.
Yeah. Like, if you were a kid watching Upgrowing Pokemon during the 90s, like, it was such a cool show, even though it was total, like, blatant marketing, right? But it had all the things that appealed to you as a kid. It had animals, it had friends, it had action, it had, like, epilepsy-causing lights, right? It had all the good shit that you wanted as a kid. And it was just this, like, really fucking heartwarming show that actually ended up being pretty cool, you know, and that it's what made you want to go out and be like the Pokemon master and stuff. And especially with the fact that you had to physically meet people who had the game and link up with them and stuff, like, it just, there was a lot of cool magic that came out of the original Pokemon series. And so we're sitting there watching it, and Riley just like projects immediately onto Pikachu, right? Because it's a tiny rat, it has little red cheeks, and it smiles, and it's cute, right?
Yeah.
So she gets all into it, and she's like, man, I wonder if they make any kind of Pokemon toys. So immediately I go up into the
and
attic.
You're like, you fucking bet your ass they do. Welcome and to the wonderful world of mass merchandise. Do they make Pikachu toys?
Oh, no, dude, it's even worse than that. So I had, you know, about a gallon-sized Ziploc of, like, toys with, like, little Pokeballs and shit like that. But I'm going through my stuff. And this is one of those cool things about fatherhood, is getting to, like, see how magical something was for you as a kid, like, over again. And I'm digging through my stuff, and I find a hat. And it's the hat that Ash wore on the show. and I completely fucking forgot I had it. So I come back down, right, and I give her the bag of toys, and her eyes just light up like fucking like a Christmas tree, and she's so excited, and she's like throwing Pokeballs and stuff like that. And then I'm like, well, I got one more thing for you. And she comes forward, and I pulled the hat out from behind me, and I put it on her head. Oh my God, Jeff, it was so sweet. I could have caught diabetes. Holy hell. She was just like, she like took it off, and then she was like, oh, it's his hat. And I was like, yep. And you know what? I bet if you wear it, some good luck will come to you too. It's just, it made my day. Oh my God. Okay, so we're going to end right there. Jeff, where can you be reached and say our end of show shit?
Matt Loguppy. I'm generally pretty positive on Twitter. So yeah, I don't rage so much. I'll occasionally be like, yeah, that's not what you want to be saying there. So yeah. I only engage people when I've got a pretty good feeling that they'll be receptive to it and just really didn't actually know what they were saying.
You're actually one of the most democratic Twitter users I've ever seen in my life. And I mean that with respect. You are so awesome to people on Twitter.
Yeah, I try to use Twitter as a force for good, for, you know, positive likes and retweets and stuff. I'll retweet things that are, might be upsetting, but are informative. Like, this is shit you need to know, because it's important. You know, it might upset you that this shit is happening, but you should be angry that this stuff is happening, not just dicking around, you know, the internet, angry at something else that's not important. There's some of that. The cast barely tweets from Not Another MTG. Mostly just when an episode goes out. Sometimes when I'm editing and feel like complaining about editing.
I mean, I don't know who you would complain about on this podcast. I really don't. You don't subtweet about me at all. I have no idea what you're talking about.
No, I always at you. Great, I always at you.
What's really great though is some days, like, because we don't have a lot of tweets on the cast Twitter. Yeah. So some days I'll ignore it and I'll just go look at it because I want to like retweet an episode link or something. And there's like all this whole like backlog of you like subtweeting and gnashing your teeth about me. So anyways, yeah, if Jeff is the Superman that Twitter wants, I am definitely the Deadpool of Twitter because I definitely rage. I post a lot of porn, and I can be reached at Jack LaCroix on Twitter. And you can listen to this podcast each and, you know, whenever we get done editing and recording it. Not that I'm throwing shade, because I don't subtweet. That's wrong.
You just, like, you can sub-comment in the middle of your own cast. Yeah.
You can listen to this show over at cardconfidants.com, where we are trying to produce the best and original content. And I have some good news. We actually are starting to cross-promote with Planeswalkers for Diversity, which, you know, we want to really emphasize that we're not a cutthroat network. We really just want to help the community and reach out to like-minded people who are interested in creating inclusive environments for content creators to grow and, you know, move on to bigger and better things if they want. So we're working with Planeswalkers from Diversity. We have a lot of new casts that are coming on Card Confidants because of that. We have Magic the Parenting, which is awesome if you are a nerd parent.
Yeah, that cast is good. I did have to turn off the first episode because there was a child crying in the background, but I think that's a reasonable barrier to have for that. If you can't deal with a giant child, child in the middle of Magic the Parenting, it's not really for you.
It's not a stretch. Well, it doesn't top the time though where I think I was recording Monday Night Magic and Riley was probably like 3 or 4. And normally, like, I go into my office and I shut the door and, you know, cause Riley's in bed and stuff and I'm sitting here. But that night, Riley just happened to be awake and Tiffany was with her and Tiffany was in like the kitchen doing something. And where my office is, there's a bathroom right outside it. And so I hear knock, knock, knock. Daddy, can you come help me in the bathroom? Knock, knock, knock. Daddy, there's no toilet paper. Please, please, Daddy. All of it got on the podcast. That's all anybody commented on that episode was go wipe your daughter's ass. But, Matt, Magic.
That's a hell of a subtweet right there.
You bastard. But anyways, Magic the Parenting is really good. NPR.
One of the people on that, I want to remember her name. But she was at GP Quebec as in the hearing, at Deschamps table, and I ran into her, and that was cool.
Yeah, she actually talks about that on the cast. But yeah, and, Dirtlewitz from Twitter is actually on there.
Yep.
Yeah. So he's on there. He's totally awesome to listen to.
There's another new cast that I didn't know about until, like, the third episode, which, I was
NPR.
I'm like, who fucking didn't tell me about this shit? And that's a direct damage cast West, which includes, Katanomiya.
Oh, cool. I had no idea about that.
Her significant other, Tank of Jank, and other people who, well, I listen for Kat, so whatever.
Yeah.
There's someone else on there.
Oh, throw Tank some love too. Come on, yeah, he's a good dude. Yeah. But anyways, we're trying to end the show. Okay. Yeah, so NPR is on there as well, and we are always looking for content creators. If you want to reach me on Twitter at Jack LaCroix, I should probably stress I'm not safe for work, but if you want to DM
SCG won't take your tournament report because they've got too much legacy content that week, yeah, fucking bring it over.
Or, you know, if you want to talk about inclusivity issues or just anything going on in the community, we really would be happy to help you. You can also reach me at email at jack@mtgcast.com if you don't want to follow me on Twitter, and that's totally acceptable, and I understand why. But anyways, Jeff, this has been a good episode. I have a lot of good feelings about this one. It was fun. So, folks, tune in next week where I promise we will not be as angry. Good night, everybody.
Yeah, we got that out of the way. Whew. Yeah.
Oh, wait. We forgot something. No, not Professor Elemental. Though we should thank Professor Elemental for letting us use his music. One very last thing that we actually forgot. Dex!
The leaders of today, show us the way! All together now!
Nah, we are keen to be in charge of it. Hardly, yeah, but the hierarchy's not me. But when art scenes stop becoming arsy, Nazis are
what?
They throw me bloody karma curse.
I hate promoters that throw a low blow, cause they don't know a dope show loaded with pros from the so-so openings blow. Most people don't go, and acts are solo like Han and don't grow.
Run, DMC really triggered me to spit, but Run recently's been preaching by some creepy shit. Some prosperity believer rich, greedy pigs, cheapest chips, just an old skeezer like Edie Britt.
Yeah, we're giving it a scolding like a Sarge does a rookie, like a father catching son snatching jars for the cookie. They're about to get a spanking cause they're dirty like a secret, about to walk the plank cause they deserve it and
you
they need
get
it.
Them crackers pausing at pedestrian crosses when the next oncoming threat is a kilometer off from them, astonishing. Oi, these crossings are for the blind populace with guide dogs holding white walker sticks.
Motorists show their fists at the slightest provocation, chauvinistic posers, righteous road raging.
So dismayed.
Some people should never play at parenthood, who never make the time to play like every single parent should.
Nothing is getting better.
Doesn't it make you sick?
You're just whinging.
It's like a bad dream.
So have a good scream and panic.
I love it, drama queens, starting scenes, charged and steaming, feeding off of petty things that they so starved of meaning. Whenever I'm feeling like my calm's receding, then I cast a fleeting glance up at the starry.
I hate jobs worse, working in jobs that treat the persons below as the dirtiest slobs. So every posh snob with a surplus of cash treats every other job like it's worthless and bad.
From an early age I played on city skates like monkey frames, but they call it free running these days as companies make commodities and jumpin' craze. The stuff that we rate just becomes a bloody cliche.
Hi, have you thought about a personal loan?
Just remortgage your home.
Don't delay.
Just pick up the phone.
Oh, for Christ's sakes, am I the one to bubble like a cauldron? Get my willow cane and administer a scalding?
First against the wall should be Kim Control, Chris, Ginger Balls, Evans,
and the fun-loving criminals.
That bitty Noel Leopards and the Venom McCall. Needles and Dolls are Liam Gallagher and Steve Seagal.
Anne Robinson, Dermot O'Leary, Michael Parkinson, and don't get me started on Carol Vorderman and Clarkson. Stars use a cause and conveniently stroll away. I'm talking Bono, Robbie Williams, and that cunt from Coldplay.
Panic! Panic! Panic all over the place.
Speak as well, man.
Yeah,
panic,
this is awful, Tom.
Panic! Wipe that smile.
Not down, mate. Off.
Nothing is getting better.
Jesus Christ. Panic.